This podcast is brought to you by On Track Studio. Welcome everybody to Big Brand Energy. Today I have Caleb Ware, a guest here. And the reason I've got him on is actually because I feel like if Big Brand Energy was personified, it would be you. Because, and I say that because of your... He's got a shirt that actually has all these sayings on it, which is pretty Big Brand Energy, if you ask me. But we'll get into all the things that he is and what he does in this episode. First of all, welcome to the podcast, Caleb.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Are you excited?
Very excited.
There's been very minimal context given for this episode, mostly because there's not a whole lot I can give when I don't really know where the conversation's going to go. But good job for taking the courageous step.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So what we're actually going to discuss, and this is what Caleb does know, and this is what I know, we're going to be talking about being in pursuit of your dreams and if you can truly be in constant pursuit and find happiness and what the costs are, how to navigate it, because Caleb is a creative and doing pretty well from what I hear in his industry. So we'll first contextualize what you do and everything to the audience so they know who they're talking to.
Love it. So, yeah, I'm a cinematographer. I'm predominantly working in commercials these days, mostly running commercial sets. So get to be in charge of the camera department and, help sort of turn the director's vision into a visual.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, like, there's so much that people don't, if you're not in the industry, don't consider. And even when we had, you know, On Track Studio, it's just a never-ending cycle of things we need to improve. But even to be able to have Caleb's help to set up the lighting in here, just purely the lens of cinematography, made a massive difference in the camera work. So I love how you view the world. I love your passion. It's just, it is intoxicating. And I want to talk about it because I feel like I have a belief where most people have a passion and so many of us are, it's undiscovered. And we have been talking before now about how you found your way into cinematography. And I'd love for you to share that story and talk to me about what you were doing before you started this and then how you got here.
Awesome. Yeah, so it's a bit of a story as we've chatted. I guess the condensed version, yeah?
Yeah.
So I was in school, thought I had to be an engineer to be anything with my life, which was hilarious. Like looking back on who I am now and you're just like, that's crazy. But left school, was super bored, had landscapes, sold phones, sold insurance, like did like laboring, was just bored basically. Had heaps of cars, motorbikes, houses. And I remember signing up to the army. So I end up in the army at like 19. Love it. Want to go special forces. Just it's all about sort of me, pride, money, respect, whatever. Again, so funny to think of who I was back then. So different now. And it's in the army that I have like this spiritual encounter, I would say, where it was, I would call it God, but whatever that is for people, it's like have this moment where I feel like I get hit by a bus in like my spirit. And it was almost like this audible voice of like, you can keep doing this, but I've got something else for you to do. And I was kind of like a bit rattled. And at the same time, my aunt was given like a week to live. And she was someone who I'd always looked up to and admired. And so like that obviously hit me really hard. And I think it enabled me to start thinking about life a little bit differently from just me, what I want, all of these things in the moment. And I remember having this moment where I'm sitting there thinking, wow, if I was to have a week to live at the end of my time in the army, would I be happy? And I couldn't answer that question as a yes. And so I end up being able to honorably discharge, think I'm on some divine path of amazingness and come home to nothing. My aunt passes away. I realized most of my friends back here were pretty crappy back then and I was pretty lost. And so I have this 2 months of just being angry, thinking I've made a mistake, super sad. And 2 months into that, I'm driving home one night to my parents' house and I feel this same little voice be like, ask me for work. And so all I said was, I need work. That was it. I was pretty off this little voice at the time.
You're like, I'm not going to beg, but I am curious. Can you please?
I know my value. Yeah. 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 And so it's like 10:30 at night. I get home. My mate's dad's called me and he's like, call this guy. He's got a job for you. I was like, wow, this doesn't normally work like this. Okay. And so I call this guy up and he's like, do you know how to use this camera? And I just say yes because I needed work. Mm. And that weekend I'm doing this like live kind of event coverage with this camera, and I start like just assimilating the knowledge, and he ends up asking me to stay on, and I'm running the thing by the end of the weekend, and started doing that for probably 6 months. And I remember a couple of weeks in, it was like my mum said, "Oh, you finally found something you love." And I didn't love the live work, but I knew something within this world of film was like for me. And that sort of took me on this journey of getting onto real sets, of making crappy little documentaries and music videos and traveling all over, but to discovering this passion I had, that for the first time in my life, I wasn't restless. I wasn't trying to be something else or somewhere else or fill this gap. It's like I had this new passion that I could pour all of my energy into, and it made me come alive. And it was that classic cliche of like going to work was the best thing.
Totally.
And so, yeah, that was kind of the journey. And then that led me through till 2016. So I was always still sort of making coffee on the side, the classic creative, you know, yep, hustling, making coffee, you know, yep, living the dreams, and always wondering like, how would I ever make proper money or like do this sustainably? And that little voice in 2016 the whole time was like, if I am who you say I am, let me open the doors. And so that was super hard for me as someone who's not passive. I have no trouble kicking down the door and running through it and chasing the opportunity. And so I'm like making coffee, trying to like, I guess, trust that if something's meant to happen, it will happen, which is probably a good lesson totally as a creative to learn, because the more you do it, the more you realize that's what it is.
Yeah.
And at the end of 2016, I meet this director who I have no right to meet by accident. Just, you know, the classic someone tells you and, you know, oh, you've got to meet this guy. He's a good mate. I know nothing. I'm so dumb at this point. And meeting this guy just must have sounded like the biggest idiot. But 2 weeks later, he calls me up. He's like, hey, I've got a job in Africa. Do you want to come on as like a second camera assistant? And I just said, yeah, sure. Didn't know anything. Get on this job, my mind's blown. Like, it's the first time I've been on a job overseas, a job that's paid, that the whole trip was just for us to get this story. And it's with an amazing cinematographer who then became my mentor. And so I end up this door that gets open for me that I waltz on through as a naive 19 or 20 year old. I come home, my mind's blown, I quit coffee. I decide like after that week in Africa, I'm like, I'm a cinematographer. I'm never making coffee again.
Change his bio.
Yeah, literally update the Instagram bio, quit coffee. And that was this one door that opened, was the door that paid my bills for 4 years, that gave me like my film school education with an amazing cinematographer who still to this day mentors me and helps me if I ever have a question or something like that. And that then obviously opened up other opportunities, and you know, the whole COVID thing shifted me more into a commercial space locally in Australia. But yeah, it was this crazy journey that I can't really take credit for of my own sort of making it happen. But yeah, it's still like my passion. I can't think of, there's no B plan or plan B for me. And yeah, I love it. And every day on set, I feel like I'm the most alive when I'm on set, and it's actually learning how to thrive when I'm not on set,
which we'll get to.
Yeah,
but I feel like I completely disagree with you of saying like no credit of your own to get that, because as much as I think, and this is the conversation I want to have, so like the person listening can hear your perspective, because it's similar to mine in the sense of you feel this signal to make a change in your life, and it feels like that moment of clarity feels so good. And yep, then you do have this expectation on what's to come next. And it involves, you think it's going to be like, sweet, I'm on path. Like, let's go. Like, I've got it. And then all of these tests come, all of these, like, are you sure? Like, are you sure? Have faith. And what do you want? And you have so many choices to make. And I think it's important for the person listening who feels like maybe they don't know their passion, or maybe they do, but they've got all the reasons not to do it. It's not as blissful and easy as what they say in Hollywood, you know, like I'm going to start this and it's going to be hard for like a few weeks and then bam, it's going to all happen. Like it truly is difficult to make the change because you're going completely against the grain. And we've talked a lot about identity, which Caleb has a really cool perspective on, which we'll talk about. And you're kind of, I guess, resistance is formed because you're doing something you've never done, and which makes you question yourself so much.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's why I want everyone listening to be like, okay, well, maybe the signal I'm feeling, whether it's a true words from God, it's a spiritual awakening, or if it's simply, I believe, like, you know, your feelings are your guardian angels. You feel, if you are in someone's company, you don't like them, you feel bad vibes, that's,
yep,
get out of there. Like, they're useless to you. If you feel drawn to someone, lean in. Like, mm. And the same with career, same with creative pursuit. But it's not to say that it's not difficult.
Mm.
And yeah, I want you to introduce everyone to this concept of identity and like the challenges you can face when you're on this creative journey with yourself. But it feels like it is with yourself, but it actually feels like it manifests in other people and, yep, their potential judgments.
Absolutely. I guess the biggest misnomer is start your own thing. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Everything's awesome. And then every day is a holiday because you love what you do. And then you start doing it and you're like, oh, this is hard and it's scary. And, you know, we were discussing that idea of, you know, that veneer of control or, yeah, that veneer of stability that people think comes with a 9-to-5. And it's almost like you just sort of pretend that we're all good. I know every week I get $1,500 and like I'm in control and I just do this and I play by the rules and this all happens. When in reality, it could be all over tomorrow. You know, you could get fired, you could get cancer, you could die, whatever it is. It's like there is absolutely no veneer. And so why would you spend your time doing something you hate to impress people you don't know, to climb a ladder that you think you're meant to climb? You know, that's this other side of the cost. But then I think when you step out of that, people that are still in that don't understand. And so like there is that very much almost makes you doubt yourself.
Totally.
Because most people, you know, I think of family or I think of different things and some are super supportive, which is amazing. And you've got your friends that know you and they're like, yeah, keep going. But there's a whole chunk of people that invalidate what you do. And so if your identity is in what they think of you, suddenly you're a mess or what am I doing? I need to quickly go and get a 9-to-5 and trade my life for, you know, someone else's business. So there is that challenge for sure. And then there's the personal challenge. Like for me, it's those things of like, I love to work. I love to be productive and have output and have realized that so much of my identity is based on what I feel like I can bring to the table.
Yeah.
And so I think the further you go into a creative pursuit or your own business, it actually gets harder it's like the levels get harder.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm definitely at a stage where not just any job is a great opportunity,
yeah,
you know, and so then you can start to feel like you're going backwards or, okay, I have a month in between jobs. What am I doing?
Mm.
You know, so like for me, the wrestle is it's in that in between of how do I thrive offset? How do I, you know, lean into the values of who I want to be as a human,
yeah,
and as a person? Because at the end of the day, as much as I love film, as much as I hope I make movie, you know, stories and that bring about change and all of this kind of thing that people can watch long after I'm gone, no one's probably going to say on my deathbed, talk about just how much money I earned and what position I had and who I worked with. It's, I hope they talk about who I was as a person to the person who was a nobody,
yeah,
you know, or those kind of things. So yeah, I think there is that for me is the challenge, is the in between, because I've probably passed the stage of really caring what people think of me, because,
yeah,
it doesn't really bother me. But
did it ever?
I think there was a time where it did, because, yeah, you're working so hard and people invalidate it and,
yeah,
you're like, I am like sacrificing everything to do this, and it actually, and people don't see the cost. They don't see,
yeah,
you know, all the important dates missed, all of the things you go without, or, you know, the internal struggles of
the meltdown.
The meltdowns, yeah, like the roller coaster,
yeah,
that the creative world or the self-employed world is. And so like to go through all of that and feel like you pick yourself up and you keep going, and then people are like, so when are you getting a real job?
Yeah.
And you're like, what? Like there is that.
Yeah.
I think now I just get more distasteful and throw it back at them. And like,
you've built enough internal evidence to know that you're on path. So
yeah,
it doesn't affect you, but yeah.
Exactly. And you're like, when are you going to do something with your life?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's a really big struggle. And then it is, you are swimming against the stream, you know,
100%.
And so, yeah, there's all of those battles. I think the creative path or chasing your dream is hard, but everything good comes with a fight, I think. Like, I think the fight makes it so much sweeter.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's really anything of value in this world that's just easy and given to you. And totally. So I think when you go through those tests, when you're at rock bottom, when you think you're worthless, when no work's coming, those are the tests of like, okay, who am I?
Mm.
And like, why am I creating? And what am I creating? And or whatever the question is, those are then when you come through the other side and you get that next job or you go up that level.
Totally.
That's when you're like, oh, okay, actually, you know, this is good. And it feels so much sweeter because you've gone through the valley and come through the other side.
I think I can definitely relate to what you're saying in the sense of like, you know, some people become addicted to alcohol. Some people become addicted to like drugs, sex, all these things. But I think it's super common as creatives to like find your own addiction in what you do and the identity you're upholding within that space. And so taking, yeah, those pauses, those times without work or client or uncertainty, you're left with staring at who you really are. And yep. Like, what if this all does crash and burn tomorrow? Who are you? And yeah. Like, do you like that person? And I think, yeah, it's something that I haven't heard a lot of people have that conversation about, but definitely for myself, having felt like high highs and low lows, I'm like, I need to have a relationship with myself where regardless of my impact or the things that I am super motivated to create and the legacy, if you will, that I'm motivated to leave, yeah, I need to have more within myself.
Yep.
That, yeah, of who I am at my core. So what questions do you ask yourself in those? Well, have you asked yourself to get yourself out of that?
That's a good question. I think one thing I guess I could speak to that I've really been learning probably in the last year is around perspective and realizing like I think we all relate to time differently. And so for me, I'm really good in the short term. And I'm really great at throwing out wild dreams.
I see that, yeah.
I'm so good at that. Yeah. But I have this black hole in between today and like some wild dream.
Yes.
The black hole is the midterm.
Yeah.
On both sides, so in the past and in the future. And so today, if I haven't worked for 3 days, I've never worked in my life and I'm a failure, you know, and I've got this dream over here that there's absolutely no way I'm ever going to achieve.
Yes. It's extremism.
It's extreme. Right. Yeah. And so like in the short term, when I'm in today, I'm addicted to momentum, right?
Yeah.
Because short term is where you're just like, you're going.
Yeah.
But what happens when I'm not moving and I'm in the short term? That's been this place. That's been like the real place for me of realizing, hang on, there's an invitation here for me to start to learn how to engage with the midterm. Because I think the midterm in the past is like the prophet to your present. So I've never worked in my life because 3 days ago I haven't had a job, you know, whatever.
Totally.
If I then engage with the midterm, hey, actually a month ago I had a job and my bills are all paid.
Literally.
We're good. So then suddenly like you've just dismantled the lie that you're useless and you've never worked and you're failing. You've actually had a month where you didn't have to work because all your bills are covered.
Yeah.
We're all good. And so like for me, that's been, it sounds so simple, but it has been so foundational of I need to start intentionally engaging with the midterm, which is remembering and celebration. So every time I get a job now, or even if it's a crappy little bill pay or whatever it is, write it down in the journal.
Yeah.
Hey, like, I'm so stoked. I had this job, this happened, whatever. Things that I can constantly come back to like speak to the lies of the present. Cause like that's where I go downhill so quick. Cause I have a high capacity and I could work every single day. So when I'm not, instantly it's those lies start to come in. So yeah, I think that's been a massive one I've been learning is like, okay, today quickly becomes the midterm. So yeah. I need to remember to celebrate and remember like write down something from today so that in 3 weeks when that's just my midterm past sort of perspective that can speak to my new today. And then on the other side of that, I've never been a goal setter. I hate goals. I hate this 10 steps in 1 year and whatever. But I think part of why I hate it is because like the accountability of it sort of scares me. Cause like I can throw the big idea out, but I normally am just like, I'll just make it happen.
Yeah.
And it'll happen. But like, I don't like being like, well, I think I'm going to do this step, then this step, then this step. But I'm learning that there's so much value in even just setting some sort of goals as signposts to keep you moving forward. So yeah, today I'm not working. Today feels like a waste, but actually like where am I growing in XYZ? And part of that was like my life coach at the time was like, how do we redefine the in-between, you know, so that it's valuable? Because, like, if you tell me the five best things about the best version of you, none of them is work.
Mm.
You know, it's like, okay, so if the best version of Caleb is present, like, how are you growing in being present with people? You don't have to work today.
Yeah.
But it's like dismantling that even cultural thing of, I need to work every day. I need to earn money every day. I need to progress every day. When you're like, well, if I'm doing all of that and I'm not present, what's the value of all of that? You know, so it's like a real conversation to, like, what are your values? What do you want to leave as a legacy? And then how does your creative passion or your work serve that?
Totally.
So I think that's been like a massive part of it, is like, how do I have peace in the pause? How do I, you know, redeem the in-between, which society would say you're being lazy, you're, you know, not achieving, you're wasting time, whatever it is. How do I value that time as the, like, almost like I see it now as like the reloading of the spring.
Totally.
You know, like winding it back up so that once we hit momentum again, bang, we're on, you know. But yeah, it's like, I think there's something in learning how to rest, in learning peace in the pause is what I would call it. And so much of that is that identity. And it's like, okay, am I creating to tell me who I am, or am I creating out of who I am?
Oh, and so that's, well said.
That for me as a cinematographer was probably that journey of finding my voice or like my style or whatever it is, and not feeling like you have to apologize for that, and realizing, oh, I'm actually employed because of my style.
Yeah.
And obviously every commercial changes and you have to do things different ways, but yeah, learning who you are and then not being ashamed of that, and realizing that, hey, when you get the jobs in that space, that's where you thrive, and that's
totally,
that's the best fit. And so, yeah, I think that was a big one, is like, what's my identity outside of work? And then that's tested, I swear, like every week, because I say I'm like all locked and loaded and know who I am, and then another week goes by without work and I'm melting down. Yeah. And you know, you're back into it. But yeah, I think that's the biggest one, I reckon.
Totally. What I'm hearing you say is essentially like, instead of seeing yourself as separate work Caleb, home Caleb, it's like actually connecting the two and seeing it all as working together, which I think is, I feel like I got so much from that whole speech. Like, that's just all people need to understand, that it's all part of it. Like, it is truly all part of it. If you can't feel the success until you feel failure.
Yep.
And it's just so well said.
And celebrating the little wins, isn't it? Because that was something else I realized I'm really bad at. I invalidate everything. You know, mum says I did a good job. Mum, I don't really give a shit what you think, because you don't actually understand what's good or bad. But that's ridiculous, because yeah, like, why would I rob myself of the joy of like that little moment of encouragement just because they're not my mentor or some
totally
big Hollywood person or whatever? It's like, that's so ridiculous. And
yeah,
I think that's been that other one on that, is like, it's celebrating all the little wins. Because if you're always, what I was always waiting for the big thing, mm, every time you get to the big thing, you're already on to the next big thing.
Totally.
And I think all those little wins is what actually sustains you long term. And like you say, like, yeah, I don't think there's a separate work and home. I think, you know, as I become more present, or as I lean more into my values and become more my authentic self, that only helps my work.
Exactly.
I'm not working to prove something. I'm not, you know, you're working out of that stability of who you actually are.
Yeah. And when you do that, you, like you say, you'll actually get chosen because of who you are, as opposed to, it's actually counterproductive to try and become someone that I guess you want to be perceived as, or to get more work and all the things. And like, as you say, there's often jobs for me and for you and for most people listening, like as entrepreneurs, you get jobs, you get a brief, what the client wants. If you can see the brief as like, okay, like parameters, that's where true like creativity actually comes out. Because if you can do anything, sometimes it's not actually, you don't feel as creative. When you've got restriction, I actually think there's so much power in that.
Yep.
Because that's when you truly activate that creativity, and that whether it's problem solving or like, yeah, I think there's so much power in restriction if you see it that way. Whereas most people see restriction or like as a trapped energy, and they spiral because of it. And it's so powerful.
100%. And I love what you were saying before when we were chatting, just around how you use your values to, you know, like, I guess guide your path as far as like, yeah, when a job comes in, does it, you know, or an opportunity. Totally. Because I think that's the other thing. We're so programmed to like opportunity equals we have to step through that because we're moving forward. But
yeah,
we're both talking about how like that's such a I think can be a distraction from does this, you know, move me towards the values that I care about? Because I don't think like, climbing the ladder or money and losing yourself equals success. And it's like, I guess it's like, I love what you were saying. I don't know if you want to share that.
Yeah, actually, but I haven't told you guys about this, but I have like, basically I call it my values essentially. And there's four of them. It's impact, connection. What were they? Impact, connection, health, and freedom. That they are my values as a person. I think it's really important to have personal values and then feed that into your creative passion or business or whatever it is. I see them as the same thing. And yeah, it can be really, what's the word, tempting to take on work as because it's like, oh, this looks good. It like busyness, you know, getting confused, busy equals productivity or busy equals progression when actually it doesn't. And like, I can't tell you, this took me a long time to learn, but it used to be anyone who inquires with On Track Studio, you're in and you're my new favorite client.
Yeah.
And now it's like, okay, whether it's a client or whether it's another opportunity within like my work, because, you know, there's a lot going on. It's like, is this going to serve my values? Am I going to feel like I'm making an impact? Am I going to feel more free? Is it going to compromise my health or make me feel health? Because like connection and relationships can compromise your health. And what was the other one? Connection. Am I going to feel connected with the people? So it's really about the people. Is this going to like further my connection with self, with the big picture or with people? And it takes the stress out of any decision. And it's like, cool, that's my guidebook. I have a compass now. And then I don't have to get caught up in the, oh, I should be removed. Like should sucks. Like if you're saying I should do this, I invite you to remove it and say I could.
Yep.
And it just allows you to be way more free and create and have a, like have fun doing it, as Kristen would say. Just have fun doing it.
100%.
Because that's the point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think like even as you're saying that, I'm just thinking of this idea of like momentum is a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And like it's not bad. And I think when you've done the work in the pause, momentum's awesome. That's that reloading of the spring. Now you're ready to go.
Yeah.
But I know for myself, momentum was such a Band-Aid because I'm, if you're good when you're slaying and working and getting the opportunity and all of this, it's not, it's like a false good because everything's happening.
Exactly.
You're ticking all the ego boxes. You're smashing it on the bank account, all of that.
Yeah.
But it's like, it was a Band-Aid for me for so long. And I think COVID has been like the pulling off of all of the Band-Aids. You know, I was mostly working overseas. So COVID happens and then I don't have any work because I've never really worked in country. And that's like a ripping off of this Band-Aid of identity. Because like you realize, oh, as much as everyone wants to talk about it, it's like, man, my identity is so in what I do, especially as a creative, you know, you're putting your heart out there kind of thing. And so like, it's interesting, like it's almost like this glorified, we celebrate people using momentum as a Band-Aid because it looks like something.
Totally.
But you're like, is it a house of cards? What are you actually building? And that's where I think that whole conversation around values came in because it was, you know, you can spend your whole life earning money that is arguably worthless anyway, you know, and trading. Totally. If we had that perspective of like, hey, I'm actually trading time, which is a very finite resource, for something that is completely worthless, to have things that just Band-Aid the human condition.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's such an invitation of like, let's stop playing pretend that momentum is the answer and that climbing the ladder is the answer and start to lean into like, okay, well, as a person, what are my values? And that'll be different for everyone. And so it doesn't mean that you can't climb the ladder. It doesn't, like, all of those things aren't necessarily, we're climbing, you know, like it's not a bad thing, but if the heart is wrong behind it, if the ladder climbing is the only time you feel okay, if that's the only time that you're able to sleep at night, what's the invitation? I think that's, there's always an invitation to authentic living, which is the stuff that we'll be remembered for.
Totally agree. And this is why I wanted to pose the question of, can you actually be happy while in pursuit of your dreams? Because I don't even believe in happy, like as a concept. I mean, I've seen it and I've felt it and it's great. But I mean, like when you are choosing this life of like pursuit of dreams, creative, business, high achiever, whatever it might be, and expecting to maintain this concept of happy the entire time, you're going to set yourself up for a loss. And because, you know, happy is only good when you felt sad, you know, it's all a spectrum. I hear it all the time of like, I just want to be happy. I just want to be happy. I don't. Like, I want to feel everything. I want to have the broad spectrum of emotions because that is the human experience. And I think business or being a part of big creative projects like you are is honestly, I've said this on the podcast many a time, but like, it's the ultimate self-development pathway. Yeah. And if you use it that way, it either adds to your life or completely makes you spiral. And I think it all comes down to expectation of what it's going to give you. And again, which is why you need to be okay with who you are and not chase anything, even if it is your dream, out of a place of validation or a need to prove.
Because you can always tell when someone's trying to prove something. And you know in yourself, like, I'm so guilty of it. Like, I've been on jobs and you're trying to say the right thing or yes, man, with the director to keep them happy. And it actually backfires.
It does.
Because then, like, what do you, like, I want someone who has an opinion, you know, and I want someone who brings something to this, not who just, and you can always tell it. It's so awkward when you're like working with someone who's trying to prove something.
Totally.
You're like, what are we doing here? You know?
Yeah.
It really destabilizes like everything.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'll be the first to put my hand up and say, I've definitely been in that position as well. Like I think I started this business on a need to prove. Maybe actually probably not started it, but there's elements of my journey that it's just been purely out of like people say I can't, I will. And that's all well and good, but it is momentum and it is what will compromise you in that trough period, you know, like it was be like, okay, well, because the first question I asked myself when the high came to a low was like, well, you can't, you know, if it's based on needing to prove and currently you're not proving, then you're completely compromising your mental health.
Big time.
So, yeah.
And if you're only as good as your last compliment or last job, then it's just not a thing.
Totally.
I think that's the longer you walk in your values or you walk in also your passion.
Yeah.
And you have to count the cost. I think that's where that resilience builds up and you start to learn, oh yeah, I can't actually get my affirmation and identity from my last job because Lord knows my last job was crap.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
I think to you, when you were talking, it reminded me of this idea I heard someone talk about and how like the religion of today is like pleasure. And so as a culture being, you know, leaning into that, it's like anything that's pleasurable is good and anything that is not that is bad.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a lie because you think of anything good or valuable maybe is a better word to say. Often it's because it was so hard and you achieved it. Like I'm a climber and if I can just walk up to a climb and climb up it, you're like, oh, that was fun, whatever. But like I've worked a climb for 6 months and like it felt so good when I finished that climb because it was 6 months of failing and like going through an absolute roller coaster of emotions, of frustration, of defeatedness, all of this, battling yourself, battling your mind. You tick that climb and it's like, means so much. Whereas if you just waltz up, climb it, you're like, oh, that was fun, but doesn't really mean anything.
Totally.
And I think that's that problem with society today or the challenge of not living as society has it is, hey, where can I lean into hard things? Like if a hard thing is actually the invitation to life, like I better lean into that because easy doesn't really get you anywhere.
No.
And pleasure is, I think pleasure is great when you've actually earned it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
totally.
if you can say I have done the 6 months of grind and of despair and whatever, and then this happened, enjoy it, celebrate it. Like amazing. But
totally.
Without the context of struggle or the context of sacrifice, pleasure is kind of meaningless.
I agree.
So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, like even talking about failure, people get really freaked out about this concept of failure. Like what if I fail? And again, I've been through this. So I'm speaking from that place of like truly having a fear of failure. And the moment I realized that failure is just is, and it's the fear that I actually have to face, like the fear of failure, like actually what does failure look like? Does it actually look like not getting to the top of the mountain? What do you call it, a mountain, or is it like a side of a cliff? Whatever
up it
may
climb,
be, wherever you're climbing. If you're looking at like failure as not getting there, then the whole 6 months don't it's not even failure, right? Because you still are in pursuit of it. Yep. So you haven't failed yet. Whereas like the only damaging fact of fear of failure is the fear that you're not going to make it. Like, why are you scared of it?
Yeah.
What's so scary about failing? Like, I can't even, I can't articulate it in the way that I want to, but have you ever had like a real genuine fear of I'm not going to make it, whether it's in personal, creative or career?
Yeah, probably quite often.
Yeah, regular.
I mean, I think comparison is absolutely the thief of joy.
Yeah, and absolutely.
I can relate to that in work on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, I'm scrolling through, I'm seeing other cinematographers just doing amazing work, getting awesome briefs. Like, what am I doing? You know, and if I wasn't looking at that, I wouldn't be thinking about that.
Totally.
So I think comparing instantly sends me down that like failure route.
Yeah.
And it's the same as I think on that 6 month climb, Rainer from Create Right, who you know.
Yeah.
We were working it at the same time and he gets through this part and like he ends up finishing the climb probably 3 months before me.
Wow.
And like when he finished, I actually went backwards and it was because I'm comparing myself to him and I'm so angry at myself that like I'm not getting through the moves, I'm not as strong, whatever it is. And like suddenly like it was probably a month of battling, which was just based out of like me hating myself and calling myself stupid on the wall and like losing it because in my mind I was so angry that he'd finished it and I hadn't.
Yeah.
And it wasn't angry at him. It was like, it was that internal comparison thing. And climbing is such a good teacher because it reveals so many of the things that I then struggle with in work as well.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, when I think especially comparison sends you down that sort of feeling like a failure because you're not the one on that job or why did they pick them, not me? And yeah, I think that steals your joy. And if you lose your joy, then that's where you suddenly start scrambling and you're looking for things to band-aid that hole with.
Okay.
And I'll throw this at you as well because I've wanted to do a project on this a while ago and it was around I think we're good at talking about when we failed and when we succeeded. But I think what you were talking about is like where I'd wanted to like set this project around, which is the moment of potential success or for failure. Mm. So it's the gap between the outcome and the like starting and the outcome. And I think that's that no man's land. That's the, I'm doing the renovation.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? Like you're not a failure yet and you're not a success. And that's the same as like, for me, it's like you're in between. And that's that moment where I think you're talking about of like, that's the really gray zone because no one's got anything to celebrate about you. No one's got anything to really be like, well, you've screwed up. At least you've learned a lesson.
Yeah, totally. And hindsight doesn't exist yet.
No. And totally. I think that is the most scary part.
Do you know what is so wild is that someone once asked me what my biggest fear was. And I don't know whether this is still my answer, but at the time what I answered was not reaching my potential.
Mm.
And the reason why that's really scary is because potential is a forever moving target and I actually won't ever reach it because it's always changing.
Mm.
And I thought about that after. I'm like, I need to adjust that because I'm just going to be so unsatisfied if that's my goal.
Mm.
So yeah, really interesting. Like this idea of potential and like who's making the rules, like nobody.
Yeah.
It's wild.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. What's been the best project you've ever worked on?
So many good ones. Probably one that's a highlight. And again, because it was so freaking hard, it was 2019. We did a job in India and it was just one of those jobs that's like, it was this story of these death hotels. Like it's just crazy subject matter. Right. In Varanasi, it's like a super holy city for like within the Hindu tradition in India. And people believe that if they come there and die in these hotels, then they achieve moksha, which is their like, they don't reincarnate anymore. They kind of, that's their sort of final progression into enlightenment. And so you have two types of hotels. You've got these short stays, which is super confusing because it's like you're kind of dead within 15 days. And apparently the priests know when you're going to die, but it's also semi-assisted sort of kind of bit gray zone. Like you're not getting fed and water and stuff. It's kind of hectic.
Yeah, right.
And then you've got this long stay, which are people that have been in these like, and the hotels are just like moldy cement rooms. They're not hotels. They're not the Sheraton and just lapping it up. And then there's these groups of people that have been there for 50 years, never wanting to leave because they believe if they die outside of the premises of their compound that it's all over and they've got to be reincarnated another 2 million times. Mm. And so like we just have these most amazing characters and some really special end of life moments with people. And it's so hard. It's like 48 degrees every day, noise the whole time, like super, you know, massive shoot days. You're washing out, you know, we're filming like bodies being burnt. You're just like covered in their ass. Like it was like traumatic in so many ways, yeah. But like this beautiful story comes out of it. And that's probably one of the most memorable trips where I felt like I was able to most authentically lean into my style.
Yeah.
And it was just like that constant, like you just sort of, for me, I'm very gut based. Like everything I feel and decision make is very, I have to trust my gut, especially on set. It's often quick. You've got one call to make. I have to just run with it. And I feel like that was one of the first times where I was trusting my gut unequivocally and just leaning into the story, leaning into what was coming at me and able to, yeah, capture it in a way that really reflected my style. So that was probably one of the most memorable, but it was because, ironically, it was so freaking hard.
Yeah.
And we had to overcome so many challenges. And at the end of it, this beautiful story comes, you know, through from it. So
it's a documentary.
Yeah, that one was kind of like it was a documentary, and it was like, wasn't an observational documentary, but it was a little bit more sort of dramatic, like with little cut scenes and stuff like that.
Cool.
But yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That would have been unreal.
It was wild. I remember just like one night washing like ash out of your hair, trying not to like to vom because it was, you
dead
know,
people.
Yeah. You're like, huh?
Oh God. Yeah, yeah. That's a lot. So did you get to talk to people literally on the deathbed?
Yeah.
Any wisdom you want to share?
No, I think like the couple that was there, like the wife was passing, and it was just beautiful to see like this old couple, you know, in at the end of their journey together. It was like heartbreaking, but just like the love they had, and you know, the guys just there with her through this like 2 week kind of or 3 week waiting time as she's passing away. And you know, for him, he was like, I hope I go quickly,
yeah,
you know, because he's like, I can't imagine life without her and that. And you're like, oh, so beautiful. But yeah, it wasn't, you know, and I think what I really loved and admired about these people was like their sacrifice, their commitment to what they believed. You know, they're like, I'm willing to sacrifice this life in order to obtain the next. Which I thought, wow, like that's so much commitment. And that's admirable. Like the faith is admirable. I thought it was sad that it's like,
what if you're wrong?
You're not living, you know, which is really sad. You're almost living to die, which is, I kind of want to do the opposite, you know. But like, I was like, wow, your faith is like that. That's admirable, you know. However, whether it's misguided or not, I thought that was really, really beautiful. And the sacrifice that people were willing to make, in that, I was like, wow, there's something pretty confronting in that. Like, what am I willing to hold to my values like that, you know? And
totally.
And like, what's the cost? And so, yeah, I thought it was definitely an eye-opening project.
Oh, it would have been. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
For somebody who like is hearing what you're saying and wants to do what you do, what's their first step?
As in to get into film?
To get into film specifically, like cinematography. Because you didn't start, you can't start as a cinematographer coming in, I can imagine.
I mean, I guess you could try. I mean, a lot of people call themselves, I mean, I called myself that well before I had any concept of what the role actually was. I got back from that job in Africa and I was like, I'm a cinematographer. I was like, I hardly knew what way was up. And so I think if you can, just do it. But I think first and foremost, like you've got to love it. Like so many people do the film school route and they drop out, or like, you know, one hard year in the industry, they're gone. And there's so much, you're doing free jobs, you're going backwards, forwards. Yeah. It's an absolute roller coaster. And so I think you've got to love it.
Yeah.
And you've got to be like, I'm in this, you know, cause it's probably for 10 years gonna suck. Like I can't, everyone's like, oh, you know, how any advice? I'm like, just strap in, because like, honestly, it's still hard. It's harder now, you know, 8 years in than it was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but the love of it, you know, I'm like, I genuinely can't do anything else. Like I love it. So I think if people are thinking about it, it's make sure you love it and can find that. But then also it's just getting on set. Chris O's a great example of that. Like, you know, hit me up randomly and we were able to get her on, and then she did an epic job, and you know, now she's working as a second AC, and that's sort of that entry into the camera department to learn how that world works and then move up the ranks.
Totally.
And then some people enter on the other way, where they maybe start as a videographer. So they're kind of just shooting little bits and pieces, and slowly their clientele grows into bigger jobs, where then they start to hire a crew and they start to have to decide, do they want to direct or whatever it is. But there's definitely no sort of one way, which I loved, because yeah. I never wanted to go back to school after I'd realized, you know, that wasn't for me. And so the idea that I could essentially view those first couple of years as my apprenticeship and just sort of be like, you know what, if I get paid, that's a bonus, but I'm just going to do anything I can to get on set. And to the point where I was telling you, like, first job, I'm like the assistant, and
I love this story.
The cinematographer would ask me for something, and I'd be like, yep, cool. And I'd run around the corner and have to Google whatever it was so I could look at a picture of it and find it in the van. You know, like, that's, I mean, I was as green as you can possibly.
Oh my God. Get. And there, that, whatever industry you're getting in, as far as I'm concerned, that's the route to go. Like, even for me, I just worked it out. Like, did I know how to start a podcast? No, I just knew I wanted to have a podcast, or for my client anyway at that time. And the same thing, even like Kristen, is probably, I need to get her on to actually unpack her journey with me, with you, because she is the product of seeing what she wants, having no idea how to get there, working it out, doing the hard work. And like, it's not easy to follow your dreams. This is exactly what we're talking about, this whole thing. Yep. Like, you and I worked for free. Kristen's worked for free. It's like this climb that feels she didn't work for free.
I've had her work for free a bit.
Yeah. Oh, actually, she came to me and she's like, I want to film a video for On Track for free. And I'm like, okay, sure. Like, just come on in. She does it. And it didn't matter that it wasn't your best work. It was the fact that you did it and the fact that you showed how keen like you were to work in this space. And I was like, that's all I want.
Yep.
You know, it's not actually about how good you are. It's about how dedicated you are and how much you want it.
Work ethic, I think, is a massive one. Like, you know, with even just to, you know, we'll keep talking about Kristen because she's great. Like, I would never have someone on a crew that knows everything but has a shit attitude. Like, I genuinely would rather someone who knows nothing but is keen and, like, wants to be there and wants to learn than have the best person who's got the worst attitude and ego. And so I think, like, I remember, like, when Kristen came on our first job, it's like there was I'm here to learn.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's the work ethic. It's like the initiative as well. Like, I think those are two things where it doesn't matter what you're stepping into. If you're passionate about it or if you want to be in it, displaying initiative and like having a high work ethic where you're 110%, whether you're free, whether you're on cut rates or your full rates, you know, and like, I mean, my first AC, it's in the camera department, like the second works under the first. And I got Kristen on for one day, but, you know, that was all I was kind of able to do. I'm like, hey, dude, like, Kristen's going to come on as a trainee. Like, she's a great person, but, you know, that's all we need to sort of do. And then he asked me at the end of the day, he's like, oh, can she come back?
Yeah.
And like, that's that point where you're like, oh, awesome. You know, like, other people are seeing this as a person who they want in the team because of, it wasn't because she knew anything. It was because she was there and she was like learning and taking initiative, and the little bit she would learn, suddenly she's just doing that 150%.
Totally.
It's like, okay, if I've learned now, I got to charge batteries. Battery stations managed, going all at it. Not a single battery's even getting close to flat. You know, like anything, whatever it was always like, that's the next thing. And I can I see that, like, she's now doing all sorts of things.
Yeah, it's like, killing it.
That's that
work
ethic.
We're both going to lose her soon.
I know.
But yeah, no, I think, I mean, I can definitely look back on my life, and I do view my first few years in marketing and then again in podcasting, like both phases, as an apprenticeship. It was like getting paid fuck all.
Yeah, like big time.
Or nothing at some stages, just to work it out and Google it, YouTube, investing in what I could when I could to learn. And then people look at me now, not to say I'm at any level of success that I want to be, but they say like, wow, like how did you do that? And like, I actually have a lot of friends who study marketing at uni and they come to me, they're like, how did you create your career? And I'm like, well, it wasn't at uni. It was doing this. And then so many of them don't do it because they want the label of what it is. Like marketing, I think, appears glamorous. It's actually not. It's very much not glamorous, but to many it can appear that way, and you're not going to get very far if you're chasing that label as opposed or status, whatever it is in the industry. You really need to just want it. And do you know how you work out whether you want it? Is you forget what it is about and you think about who you are.
Yep.
And whether you can actually cultivate that in that career or pathway.
Yeah. And I think too, it's removing, and I have to check myself on this all the time, it's that victim mentality.
Yeah.
As soon as you get in that comparison zone and you're like, oh, well, actually they're getting these sick jobs because their mom's a big producer.
Yeah.
Like that is a valid reason. And I don't have that. I have no ins to the industry. Like I'm ground up, you know, just little step at a time.
Totally.
And so you can play this victim of like, oh, well, if my mum was a producer and would get me that job, then I'd be doing that. And it doesn't get you anywhere.
Totally.
And I think that's another one with people want these careers or they want to do the thing they love, but then it doesn't automatically all fall into place, or they don't want it bad enough to actually go through it. And that's that then, oh, there's a victim. I've got a reason why I can't, and it's because of someone else. And it's like, there might be hurdles of other people's making to overcome. Absolutely. But like at the end of the day, you're only responsible for yourself. And that's where knowing who you are and knowing what you want and why you want it, suddenly you have to check yourself and be like, actually, like, there's nothing stopping me from working my way up to those jobs. It looks different. Everyone's journey is different. But that was another really big thing for me, I think, was can't be a victim.
Totally.
You know, like I'm not. Like decisions, like if I mess up on a job, and I remember a good example of that. Like I had a job and it was like one of my earlier jobs on like a crane. Mm. And so with a crane as a DP or the operator, you're kind of doing the tracking. So you're either on wheels, which is kind of controls the remote head for the camera, or you're on a joystick. And just given the fact that I'd never really had access to it, I wasn't that good at it. And I remember being on this commercial and having this moment where in my gut, I'm just sick to the stomach because it's a slightly hard move. I know I cannot, I know I'm not capable in the sense of I might fluke and I might get by, but I just was so out of my depth, which is a good place to be in certain ways, but you're trying to like impress people. And I have this sick feeling, and I could in that point be like, okay, I'm a victim. I haven't had the opportunity. I haven't been given a chance to do this. And all of that is very true. And I got through it. No one really noticed it, but I had to go away from that. And I remember making a pretty sizable investment into some like wheels, which is one of the ways we do tracking, because I was like, I need to have these, I need to practice, because I never want to be, I had identified a gap in my skill set that was critical to me leveling up and being confident on bigger jobs, because it's such a normal part of my world. And I remember being like, okay, I got to outlay way more money than I have and to get this piece of equipment to practice on, because I cannot ever be in that situation again.
Absolutely.
Like if that was on a bigger job, you know, and I could have potentially burnt a whole heap of bridges and gone backwards. And so it was like a moment of like, this is a week, like an area I need to take accountability in. I'm not a victim. I have to do something about it. And then went away and practiced for ages and have confidence now. Like when I am on a job, I know what to ask for. I know I'm confident on wheels, on different heads, on different things, because that's a skill set I've now developed.
Exactly. And I think you're just bang on. I highly respect how you went about that, because for me, I'm like, I have the exact same pathway. Like I used to always say, you know, but they have support, they've got whatever financial backing, all these things, and all of that was true. But the moment you sit in that, you're actually completely putting the power external from you. So you're actually, you're powerless. So the moment you actually just take it all on board. Okay, that's true. But what is within my control? What do I have access to? And I just think there's so much power in seeing knowledge gaps as such. Like, call it what it is. I don't know how to do this.
Yep.
It's not, this is what I was talking about in the episode with Kristen. It's not actually imposter syndrome. It's a knowledge gap.
Yep.
Like, go and fill that gap. The best thing I ever did was invest highly in a mentor for myself. And it's now I get to be better.
Yep.
Instead of being, exactly, victim to the circumstance.
It's huge. I think that's been a big one, hey?
Because, by the way, both of us are very happy.
100%. And I think, honestly, this year's probably been the worst year for work for me.
Yeah.
Like, the industry's in a bit of chaos, and I know a lot of people in the industry are really struggling. But I would say it's probably the happiest. And contentment used to be such a dirty word for me. Like, I fucking hate contentment. I'm not content. I have big dreams, passions. And then I started to realize that contentment isn't actually settling. Contentment's being able to be present now and okay.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have seen more growth in myself and in my values. Someone who say, I'm so much more present and I'm so much better in the pause. And even my, I can have times now where my thoughts are so much slower and I'm okay with it. I'm able to just like literally observe beauty in nature or something like that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I would, and when you asked me, it's like, are you happy? And I was like, actually, I'm probably the happiest I've ever been in the hardest time where there's the least, I'm not killing it at the moment. You know, like it's a hard, and there's so many unknowns and there's cliff edges coming up of massive change and all of this. And yeah, I would say like, wow, I'm the most like grounded, content and like, okay. Which I think is then happiness, you know, that I can probably ever remember, even when I was busy and killing it, you know, like, and so like, I feel the healthiest and the strongest and all of these things that aren't work related, but like put me in a position where I'm at so much more peace in that pause, like than I ever have been, I reckon.
It's so empowering when you realize that you have either neutral or positive emotion in an environment where the external reality is not the best it's ever been. I completely agree with you. I've been in much better external situations where things are going better, relationships or whatever are like blossoming more or something of that nature. But I've never been better within. Like, and I would say for me, it's calm, which is essentially what you're saying too. So interesting.
Yeah.
One last question. In your pursuit with like cinematography, Is there an actually like what's the big vision? Like what is your big fuck off goal?
Big goal. I mean, it's funny because like, doing what I love, it would be to do more of it probably. If I could have like the dream would be a healthy sort of probably 50% of amazing commercials of the year would be amazing commercials. And then that other 50 would be a mix of like documentary work that is super creative and matters. You know, we used to do a lot of stuff with like NGOs in developing world on, you know, helping stopping like slavery, or like I have a project coming up at the end of the year to do with like trafficking, you know, those kind of things. If you've got like the 50% of epic commercials, which pay well, which sharpen your skills, then you're sort of freed up for that other 50% to do things that kind of matter either creatively or, you know, from a values perspective. So a little bit of narrative, a little bit of like that sort of stuff would be the dream, I think. But honestly, it's like, can I do this? Hopefully like one day, you know, support a family, live like to do life well, like that's sort of the thing. So yeah, I guess it's just doing a little bit more on a little bit better or higher tier than what I'm doing now really. And I guess, yeah, growing in health externally from that
as
you
well.
Know at the same time would be the dream. I think so.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And you're off to Europe like when? Next week?
In a couple of days.
Yep. To go make that a reality, I'm pretty sure.
We'll see how it goes.
We'll check.
It feels like
in.
It might happen. Yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for coming on. It's been unreal to chat to you.
Thanks
all morning. You're welcome.
It's been great.
Bye.